member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 8th of August, Anno Domini 2015, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, so eights are in my head. At 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Before we do that, actually, I should point your attention to our homepage at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. On the right-hand side of the page are all the ways that you can participate in this grand experience. Both of our phone numbers, the local one and the long-distance one, are there. Our text number is there. A link to listening to us live on over the web is there. And a link to our YouTube channel is there. So it's pretty easy to find us. They're all on the upper right-hand side of the page. Most of you won't even have to scroll. In the meantime, I'll read the news. For years, there's been a common perception that Apple's MacBook laptops and iMac PCs are more secure than Microsoft's Windows computers. However, that myth is set to be shattered by security researchers Trammell Hudson and Zeno Kovac, who have developed the first-of-its-kind malware that can infect a Mac's firmware, and it's called ThunderStrike 2. For Kova, co-founder of security training firm Legbacor, and Hudson, and a security engineer and investment firm Two Sigma Investments, this proof-of-concept worm exposes a potential security flaw on Apple's computing devices. Hudson says it's really hard to detect, it's really hard to get rid of, and it's really hard to protect against something that's running inside the firmware. A computer's primary firmware, also referred to as the BIOS, UEFI, or EFI, is the piece of software that boots all the installed components and launches the operating system. With the ThunderStrike malware, this critical software can be infected. And this is perhaps the perfect place to hide malware, because antivirus and other security products do not have the capability or permission to scan this firmware. It starts working as soon as the computer is switched on and starts collecting potentially sensitive data, website logins, passwords, banking details, and even log keystrokes. Actually, it starts doing all that even before the computer is booted up. There are multiple ways of infecting a Mac with a malware that would work the same way as ThunderStrike 2. Email attachments, infected downloads, fake websites, even on a network through the Wi-Fi router. And it is extremely easy for it to be spread to more computers. The malware then searches for any external devices connected to the infected computer, such as a portable storage drive. The worm proceeds to infect the firmware installed on those peripherals too, and will spread to any other computer they are connected to. As a user, you cannot really identify if the firmware has been infected or altered in any way, because the computer will continue to boot normally. Even if you suspect something is wrong and reinstall the operating system afresh, the malware still remains untouched, because the firmware does not get wiped and reinstalled. This is perhaps a situation where most users would only end up throwing away that particular computer. Last year, like it says, pay attention, you can't even wipe the machine and reinstall the software. That doesn't touch the malware. Last year, Kova and his partner at Legbacor, Corey Kellenberg, had identified multiple firmware vulnerabilities that infected Windows-based PCs, including, obviously, those from Dell, Lenovo, Samsung, and HP. While PC makers do install some level of security to prevent all unauthorized alteration of the BIOS, they are still not completely foolproof. Macs have no such firmware security. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, again, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is a worm that can ruin your Mac. And your choices are horrible, I'm very worried, I'll be careful, my head's in the sand, and Mac, what now? So far, we've got about 30 votes, and Mac, what now is ahead. Luckily, those of you who have Macs, horrible, I'm very worried, is in the lead of those three. And I know you'll have more to say about this because this is a very serious issue. And so if you head to the forum, scroll down on the right and under Fascinating Stuff. The first link there is the forums, and the second link of the forums is the poll discussion. And if you check that out, currently at least the first thing, the first topic under the poll discussion is 8 August 15, a worm can ruin your Mac. And please feel free to join the discussion there. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free 1-800-790-0415.
One of the issues with the Thunderstrike malware is it has to come in through a Thunderbolt device. So someone has to give you an infected Thunderbolt device, and you have to plug it in.
But that was originally true.
Yeah.
But with Thunderstrike 2, which is the one they're talking about here, it can come through wireless. It can come from a download, from a site, can do whatever.
And even things that need to be plugged into your computer... there was an older exploit called Bad USB.
Right.
On Mr. Robot this week. Are you watching that on one of the USA?
I am currently not. I'm recording it, but I haven't seen it.
It's an interesting story about a group of hackers, but all the code they use is real.
Yeah.
And so, what is this? Mark Graham Chapman out of England. He's got a blog where he looks at code on computer screens on TV.
Right.
And tells you what it is. So one of the things, there was an episode recently where they had to break into a prison computer. And so they just scattered a bunch of USB keys in the parking lot.
I've talked about that, yes.
And somebody picked one up and plugged it into the computer inside the prison just to see what it was.
Yep. I've talked about that. That was done at a bank, yes. And I have to say the first episode very much impressed me when two of the characters had a discussion of whether GNOME or KDE was a better... front end for Linux. I very much appreciated that.
Yep.
But yeah, this is a pretty serious thing, folks. And sadly, I there's nothing you can do about it yet. There's no antivirus signatures for it. There's no fix for it. And as I read, the only thing you could conceivably do to fix this is remove the firmware chip from your laptop or desktop. But those are soldered in these days, so that's not going to happen.
That's surface mounted, and that goes through many layers. So, no, you're not removing that.
So, again, be careful what you click on. Be careful what you download. Be careful. It's the same thing with the Android stuff, because we have a couple of stories about that as well. There was an attack that could, if you opened a multimedia message, MMS, it could infect your machine. And so the only time I open one up is when it's from somebody I really, really, really know.
Yeah.
So at any rate, be very careful if you own a Mac as to what you open and
And especially when you're getting those warnings or, you know, call us from a bank or something else, or you got a package to pick up.
Those
stupid ones that people will... go ahead and click on, because curiosity gets them, and they feel that they have to.
Right.
But if you know you don't have a package coming.
I had a person who will remain nameless gave me a call, and I've said this many times. I don't do a lot of tech support anymore, but this was family, so I went and helped out. And the very first thing I saw was a file on the desktop, and I opened it up, and it was information from somebody saying, and we've done this to your machine, and this to your machine, and this to your machine. I said, what is this all about? It said, somebody came in remotely to my machine. I had some problems. All righty. So we did a full scan of that machine, and man, it was full of junk.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, a keylogger, and it had everything. I had everything. Mm-hmm. So I cleaned the machine up completely, and
gave him the bill and said,
Yeah, well, you know, yeah. Two bills with family.
Yeah.
Family.
That's what I mean. You can say, as they sit there and say, well, how much do I owe you?
You give them the bill and say family discount at the bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, there you go.
I got a lovely cup of coffee and a delicious Danish.
That's pay.
And that's pay. So I was well compensated. And, of course, I got to spend time with family. So nothing wrong with any of that.
That's all pay.
Nothing wrong with any of that. That's how that works. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Mark. From Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. Talk to me.
How are you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, good. I got a question for you.
That's why you called me.
Yeah, I hope so.
Windows 10.
Yeah.
I was just curious last week what was going on, and I went on the icon, and I didn't see much going on, and I went into my Windows update, and I noticed it said Windows update to Windows 10 Home. Failed, and I get an error code of 802-400-20. And I looked up, well, of course, going through Microsoft, there was no help there, you know, find out what this is about, and it doesn't tell you anything.
Right.
And I did a little research on the internet, and from what I saw, people say go into your Windows folder, go to software distribution, go to download, and delete everything in the download folder, leaving the download folder intact. And then there was a thing to run a command prompt to start the download again. And
right.
I was wondering if you knew anything about this error code.
Some people are getting it, but, you know, that's really kind of a... that's not special to Windows 10.
Right.
It's pretty generic. Every once in a while, it's the internet. Downloads fail.
Yeah, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, oh, probably 15 or more of them since the 29th.
Right.
I got it on the 29th.
Right. Oh, you did get it on the 29th?
Yep.
Okay.
And it's been failing ever since, and I was wondering if it's something I should leave alone.
In general, let it rework itself.
Mm-hmm.
What may be happening is... there's clearly an issue somewhere. Whoever your provider is may be having a glitch. It also could be if it's that giant 400 megabyte download,
mm-hmm.
Your machine just hasn't been on long enough to finish the download.
Right.
You know,
oh, boy, isn't it like 4 gigabytes?
I meant 4 gigabytes.
5 hours in a day.
Yeah, I know. Do I have Enright disease?
Yeah.
I called it megabytes instead of gigabytes. Try this. If you're going to start the download, because it happens in the background and because it's silent, mm-hmm. you don't know when it's done, which really porks me off. So start it in the morning and just do your standard stuff all day, but leave it on all night.
Okay.
And
through the next day. You can turn off your monitor.
Well, yeah, but turn off sleep on the computer.
Oh, right.
I use in power management is to let the monitor turn itself off.
Perfect.
That's it. I don't use anything. I don't let the hard drive go to sleep or anything like that.
Right.
I just find it too tedious and time-consuming to get it to come back up.
Right.
If it even wants to.
Right. Good. Try that.
I have it says here, it says we're validating Windows 10 for your PC. We recommend that you upgrade your, this is the message that comes out of the icon in the system tray.
Right.
It's all it says in the actual thingy.
Right. So, if you have updates.
The other question was.
Wait. Let's finish that issue first. If you have a message that says you should be updating components,
mm-hmm.
then you definitely should be doing that in case that's the problem, your download is failing.
It doesn't say I need to update components. It just says it's validating let's see what it says here again. It says it's validating my upgrade. We're validating Windows 10 for your PC. We recommend that you update after your notification that Windows 10 is ready for your specific PC.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's the only thing I get as far as within that icon coming up.
Yeah.
It only says one piece of software isn't compatible and all the hardware is compatible.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so yes.
No big deal for the
All right,
software.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, what
okay.
was your other question?
The second one is I've got calls from three of my friends that are freaking out because they said, oh, everybody's sending these emails that there's all this data mining in Windows 10. and I was wondering if you knew about it.
Yes, there is Windows data mining in Windows 10. Just like in every operating, there's been data mining in Windows 8 and in Windows 7 and in Windows 95 and
it's been there.
Everything else. They've been doing this forever. One of the things you can do is opt out of most of that. But the reality is these days, if you're on the internet at all, they're data mining you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not, and but the other
data
thing,
mining, been data mining since day one. I know that for
so
sure.
So has Microsoft with Bing. So has Yahoo. So has everybody. If you do anything at all with their systems, let's say you have Yahoo Mail or you use Yahoo as your homepage and go mm-hmm. to other sites through them. They're all data mining you. That's what they do. That's why they have those pages.
Right.
So the reality is that you've got a choice as to who data mines you.
Right.
But no choice as to whether or not you're data mined if you're going to be on the internet.
Right.
So there's a lot of hoopla about this. You can turn most of it off. There are some settings that let you do that. There are far too many of them to talk about here.
Right.
But we can put up.
I'll post something.
Steve's going to put up a link.
Ironically, not from Microsoft.
I know. There's a shock, right?
I would figure they wouldn't put that up there.
But yes, you can turn much of it off. Certainly, you're not turning all of it off. If you use Bing, for example, Microsoft will have that information. If you use Google, Microsoft will have that information. Pretty much DuckDuckGo is the only one that they say doesn't mine your data. But generally speaking, anything you do and anywhere you do it, you're data mined. If you've installed apps on your phone, many of them will data mine you. I read the end user license agreements. I know nobody does.
Right.
I also,
this is what they were talking about, and it says, you know, we have access to your banking records, we have access to this and that and the other thing, and they were all freaking out, you know.
Yeah, that's just
going,
the one.
Well, I said, I don't think data mining is a new thing, and I said, I know it's not new for Microsoft, I just don't know how heavy-handed it is in 10.
Yeah, it's heavier in 10 than it used to be, but you can turn much of it off, at least there's a switch. I don't know if it actually turns it off, but there's a switch that gives you peace of mind.
I'll look for the link.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 22 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Tom from Brockport on the line. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hey, just one second. Is it all right if I put you on speaker?
Maybe.
All right,
see how the speaker sounds.
If it doesn't work, then we'll go back to regular.
Right.
All right.
All right. You there?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're a little tinny, but so far not so bad. What's up?
Okay, basically, I have a few questions. I called in a couple weeks ago. It was the end of the show. I figured I'd wait and call back. But I have late 2008 MacBook Pro, 15.4-inch. It has 2 1-gig sticks of 1066 DDR3. I forget how many pins those are. 204.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. I was taking the Apple certification, like Apple Care certification.
Yep.
Just one second. What? Here go. What?
Keep talking.
Okay. Sorry about that. So, I was just about to complete the program when something else happened and I didn't get the tools. So I see you can get the tools and you can get the memory. I'm just wondering, like, are there any reputable sites that you recommend or would any retail locations in the area that you would recommend? I just moved to Brockport, so I'm not really familiar with the area.
Right. Steve?
Well, most of the vendors are in Henrietta. we're in Victor. You
have a place?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We have a store called Mac Ave in Victor on Route 251, just off of 96. We're between the thruway and the village.
Okay.
It's usually best to call ahead with your serial number to make sure we have the RAM in stock if you don't already have it.
Sure, sure. Now, let's just give a hypothetical. Since I can, I've been taking PCs apart and putting them back together with my eyes closed, my hands tied behind my back since like 1991, is this something I could most likely do if I had the proper tools and the correct hardware?
It's similar to PCs, but different, so it depends on how adaptable you are.
Okay. Also, laptops are generally harder than desktops.
Oh, I put RAM in laptops more times than I can count.
Yeah.
It's never a Mac.
They don't have the convenient doors that that desktops do in general.
What's fortunate is that this one does have a removable battery, so it's right under the battery door.
Right. Well, here's the thing. I would say probably.
Okay.
If you're extremely facile with doing PCs, doing Macs is really, at this level, because all you're changing is the RAM.
Yeah.
At this level, it's just a different configuration of the same
idea. Yeah, I need to go from 2 to 4 because I use Memory Clean, and hey, that's great for right now, but it's still not great.
Yeah. No machine should ever be sold with 2 gigs of RAM anymore. I'm sorry.
Oh, right.
In 2008, it was fine.
I was considering wiping and going back to, like, Leopard until, I could...
Right.
But, by the way, I did answer your poll, and I am terrified.
Good. You should be. This is a terrible thing. And it should terrify you. We don't have a solution yet, but it's out there in theory. We haven't seen it in the wild yet, but you should be terrified because, the minute they put it out on the Black Hat, they're planning on talking at the Black Hat conference. Once that's done, it's out there. So, but at any rate, to get back to your story, if you're very careful as always, grounding yourself and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And as long as you're careful and label where everything came from and put it all back, you shouldn't have a problem. 2008, you probably don't have a warranty to worry about anymore.
Oh, exactly. My AppleCare ran out in 2011, so they won't touch it.
Yeah, right. So
plus it has liquid damage, so...
Ah, there you go. So, certainly...
There's that question. That's taken care of.
Yeah.
Thank you. If you don't mind, I have just one other...
go ahead.
Okay, basically, how do I put this? We also have a late 2000, or rather early 2008, it was like the last of the aluminums.
Right.
Before they went to the unibody.
I believe it came with Leopard. It won't turn on. It just won't turn on, and it hasn't been able to turn on since like 2011. We've been using a ThinkPad R51 just as a replacement, just to have something, and we'd like the data at least.
Right.
At least if we can get
it. Here's the deal.
Back to,
Yeah, here's the deal. It depends on why it won't turn on.
Yeah, I'm thinking power supply, something like that.
Right.
Well, then, on a laptop, it's real easy to try a different power supply.
Right, because it's external.
Right.
So if it's not the hard drive, that's the problem. You
could
pull the hard drive and insert it in another computer as the second hard drive. The problem with that is you have to have the extenders and the special cables and the
There's cable chassis designed to do that.
External enclosure.
Right.
Yep.
So if in fact the problem is not with the hard drive or has not affected that, like you had a lightning strike which blew out some of the internals but didn't blow out the hard drive,
Right. So you're basically saying that, the MagSafe connector with the the cube at the bottom, that is the power supply on on a MacBook. Okay. So there's no internal component that controls power.
But once you get inside, there are transformers and regulators and shunts and all the things. But
there's something called the system management controller that.
Oh, I know all about SMC. Right, yeah. I use SMC fan control because of my liquid damage.
Right. So basically, what you want to do is, since that machine is assuming it's more than just the power supply, right? You can pull the hard drive. And if you've got the right connectors, et cetera, mount it as a second hard drive on another machine. And like yours, and hopefully pull the data off. But it again depends on whether or not that machine is, or that hard drive is whole.
Okay. Yeah. See, it just one day wouldn't turn on, you know?
Yep. Everything works fine until it doesn't.
Right.
Yeah.
People ask us that all the time. It worked fine last night. Yep.
Yep. I know.
Everything works fine until it doesn't.
I used to work for the large conglomerate that call center place around here for the three letter.
Yeah, we got it.
You got it.
Okay. Here's the thing. You can certainly give that a try if you've got the right equipment. There's two reasons most people don't do this themselves. One is they don't have the expertise. It sounds like you do. And secondly, they don't have the equipment. And that's, if you say you do, then you do. So
That's the thing. I've seen sites that say they have the correct screwdrivers and, how Apple, of course,
has
everything proprietary, But
did you just hear Steve?
Yeah.
He said he gets his screwdrivers from Sears.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. If they carry them, then why not get them there?
Okay, because I found a package of every screwdriver you would need for a MacBook Pro for like $5.
There are some weird screws on some of the newer Retina models, but the older models are pretty much all standard screws.
There
okay, because we were looking, because we also do model railroading.
Yeah.
And we were trying to find screws that would take the back off, or screwdrivers that would take the back off. But
jewelers.
Right. Anyway, give those things a try. We really kind of have to move on, Tom.
Oh, all right. You have a great one. Thanks for your show, and have a good one.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, there's one of the, like I said, there's really two things. One is, do you have the expertise to do the job? And two, do you have the right tools?
Yeah.
I can take apart a motor. I don't have most of the necessary tools, including like an A-frame to pull that motor out of the car. But, so it doesn't, it, right?
You get a bunch of drunk buddies, just lift it?
I've done that.
Yeah.
Believe me, I've done that.
No, I've sat by Nick while I worked on his PC and saw him starting to sweat.
That's got electricity in it. I don't do that. I told you I've traumatized him. When I was a kid, saw my dad blown across the room.
But see, that
from
scares
that.
Me.
That's different.
To think that you would even try it.
Just plain mechanical things where all I can do is bark my knuckles. I don't have a problem with that. It's that where there's electricity in there. That makes me crazy. My hands start to shake. It's a trauma. I was traumatized. Listen. Where's Sarah McLachlan? I'll put my head on her lap. She can sing a sad song for me. But you're right. I won't touch the insides of a computer. I just won't do it. It's like fear of flying or fear of heights. It's completely irrational fear.
And there's almost
I hate to tell you, in a car, there's this thing called a battery.
I can take the battery. ends off, I let somebody else take the battery
in. Well, most of the places that sell batteries.
Fine.
Most of the places that sell batteries will do free replacements for you.
That's true.
So they recycle the old ones.
But no, Nick, just disconnecting the battery, I would worry about.
Yes. That's something you disconnect the battery, I'll do everything else. It's an irrational fear, and I know it's irrational. And I can talk my way around it. It's like fear of flying, fear of heights, any other fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's a phobia, and I cannot get past it.
And there's almost nothing inside a computer you can fix anymore.
Well, that's
everything
that
is on the motherboard. If something goes wrong, you replace the motherboard.
Yeah.
Or if you're lucky, you can add a card that replaces that function.
Yeah, I pulled a cable loose at one point on purpose, and I want to go back in and put it back in again, and I just haven't cracked open the case to just push that cable back in. All I have to do is push the cable in. And I know it's just a cable.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't done it yet. It's an irrational fear. I can't help that. It is what it is. So I don't do that stuff. Listen, we're going to take a quick break while I mop my fevered brow. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We'll be starting a telethon for Irrational Fears later on today. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we... our sound bites. Do we have somebody on the line? Mm-mm. No. Okay, good. In that case, I will read the next email, what do they call them? News item. In July, a major bug was discovered in the software that could let hijackers, in your Android software, that could let hijackers access data on up to a billion phones. Manufacturers have been slow to roll out a fix because many variations of Android are widely used. One Android expert said it was about time phone makers issued security fixes more quickly. Android has been working to patch a vulnerability known as Stage Fright, which could let hackers access a phone's data simply by sending someone a video message. My guess is that this is the single largest software update the world has ever seen, said Adrian Ludwig, Android's lead engineer for security at the hacking conference Black Hat. LG, Samsung, and Google have all said a number of their handsets will get the fix with further updates every month. Why the long wait? Well, Android is an open-source operating system with the software freely available for phone manufacturers to modify and use on their handsets. The Google-led project does provide security fixes for the software, but phone manufacturers are responsible for sending the updates to their devices. Some phones running old versions of Android are no longer updated by the manufacturer. Many companies also deploy customized versions of Android, which take time to rebuild with the security changes. Apple and BlackBerry can patch security problems more quickly because they develop both the software and the hardware for their devices. BlackBerry software is reviewed by mobile networks before being sent to handsets, while Apple can push updates to its phones whenever it wants. In the U.S., it's even worse because mobile carriers often add their own software, too, adding another layer of bureaucracy holding up security fixes. There's no real villain here. That's just how the system works. But there will always be security concerns with software, so it's right that some of the manufacturers are stepping up to deal with this now. So has your Android device been updated yet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
That's so many layers between the OS and you. And I can't imagine many phone makers even bothering doing that. And let's just put out a new phone and make you buy that.
Well, and that's exactly the issue at hand. On the one hand, having an open source operating system, blah, 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 is really wonderful. But when the company who's theoretically supporting that operating system isn't doing their job, that's when that whole open source business breaks down.
Yeah.
That's why so many people now are buying phones that are Nexus phones, because those come directly from Google and will always have the latest of whatever they have on them.
Yep.
So back to the phones. It's Matt from Buffalo, New York, who may have a rant. Go ahead, Mark. What's up?
No, it's me, Matt. Nick, how you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
All right, pretty good. Here's my problem. Every time I go to a website, man, I tell you what, these boys make me want to have a password. Like, you got to do the special characters, upside, downside, special characters, exclamation point. Why do they do that? Why can't I have my password, like, B27 sometimes? I mean, that kind of gets on my skin, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand that.
They don't want it to be too easy for someone else to guess and get into your account and cause havoc.
Right. Here's the thing. When you have a simple password, it's very easy for a computer to break. The longer the password, the better. The more complex the password, the better. So people are really... Really, you should have uppercase and lowercase letters, numbers, and symbols, and a minimum length of 14 characters. No, excuse me, I lie. 17 characters to have a truly secure password these days. But even if it's only 5 or 6 or 8, at least if you have those, the complexity, it's going to be better for you. There's a website you can go to. That will give this. That will demonstrate this to you pretty clearly. It's at grc.com/haystack. I want to say
haystack.htm.
.htm, and Steve's going to put up a link to it. As a matter of fact, Steve Gibson of Gibson Research Corporation (GRC) writes some of the best code in the business.
All in assembler. Hand-coded assembler.
Yeah. And which is why his stuff is so small and fast. But what he's done is he's put up a site where you can put in a password, and it will tell you how long it takes to break it. And the difference between B15 and Happy 34 Monkey with capitals and numbers and exclamation points is the difference between 8 seconds and 30,000 years.
Now, some people take a two-tiered approach to passwords. If they're creating an account for a blog that they're just going to post on, it doesn't have to be as secure as a password you're creating for your bank and your money. Anything that involves money, you want to have a really, really secure password and never use that password anywhere else. A lot of people ran into that with the Target breach. And so if, you know, all your data from Target, you know, 70 million people, was it finally in the end? So all your data, including your password, may have been breached and compromised by the bad guys. And if you use that same password somewhere else, they're going to try Amazon. They're going to try Walmart. They're going to try Citibank. And if you use that same password somewhere else, they've got your account now. So you never want to use the same password on more than one site. Which,
right.
Which adds to the complexity.
And Steve's put up a link to the Haystack software, and you can see the difference between 3 characters, which is seconds, and...
Even Happy 34 Monkey is 8 minutes.
Right, but if you put capitals in there and...
And not at the beginning.
Right, and not at the beginning, and suddenly it's now just with the
65 years.
Capitals, 65 years. So putting a couple of capitals, putting some sort of symbol in there just makes it longer and longer to break and therefore more and more secure. So as Steve said, if you're posting on a website and you don't care if somebody posts in your name, which trust me, you should care.
Yeah.
But if you don't care, then use a lousy password there. But when it comes to your banking and your email and stuff like that, you should use a more secure password and never use the same password in two places.
And a lot of people use a password manager like 1Pass or LastPass.
Right.
The Apple Mac has Keychain built in.
Right.
And so it can remember all the passwords for you. It can even generate, you know, 50-character passwords you have no hope of remembering. Because it remembers it for you.
Right, and it will put it in for you every time you go there.
So, and all you need to do is remember your 1 master password.
Right. Does that make sense, Mark?
Yeah. I mean, that sounds so good. I mean, because, you know, every time I come up here, I get mad about it because, you know, I want to put in my thing as like, no, you got to remember this. And I can't, you know, my memory is only so big. I can only remember a certain amount. But, you know, I've seen that feature in, I think it was Firefox or Foxfire or something like that, where it would auto-generate the thing, and I just said no. But, I mean, that sounds like a good solution. I'm going to use that next time. I appreciate the call.
There you go. Thanks, Matt. Good luck.
A lot of
Take it easy.
Yep.
You too.
A lot of people would use quotes or phrases from movies or books. Don't, because the bad guys know that.
Unless it's a ridiculously obscure movie.
Yeah. One of the most popular quotes that shows up in password lists is, "There is no fate but what we make," from the original Terminator.
Right.
And it's kind of a neat password, but it's 26 characters long, and it would take trillions of centuries to break, except the bad guys know that one, and so it's in the list.
Right. I have a friend who told me his password one day as I was helping with his machine. He said, "Oh, yeah, my password is trust no one." So I said, you know, that's probably the most common password out there after 123456.
Yeah.
Because X-Files was very popular at that time. He said, "Oh, no, mine's different. It's not the word one, it's the number one." I said, "Yeah, that doesn't make it better. It actually kind of makes it worse."
Yep.
But people will tend to do that. And now, having a phrase is a good thing. If you've got a favorite poem or you've got a favorite song or a favorite book, don't use anything from that because everybody knows it's your favorite thing. But if you have one you like, but it's not maybe your favorite, but you know the lyrics or you know the poem or whatever, then pick a middle line out of that one. You know, something semi-obscure whatever it's going to be, make up a sentence and use that. And here's another thing. You're always being asked for security questions, and people tend to, okay, you asked for security questions. What was the name of your first dog? What was your parents' maiden name? What was your house? What street did you live on as a kid? A million people know that information. And, oh, by the way, you give out that information on every friggin' Facebook quiz there is. 90% of Facebook quizzes are designed to get your security information. Pay attention to what you're typing into those things. It's all the stuff you type into security questions. Yep. So what I do is I lie. I write it down because I use, you know, LastPass or KeePass or one of those.
Yep.
What? God will get me for that. God is happy that I'm lying about these things.
Yeah. That's the truth.
So I lie. So if it says, you know, what was your, what street did you live on as a child? My answer will be X-Files. Well, go ahead and guess that. Well, it isn't, by the way. Yeah. It isn't. But go ahead and guess that.
Well, it's like mine. You know, if you sit there and some of the others. What's your favorite color? Ford.
Exactly. Lie. But just then write down the answer.
Then you got to remember your lie.
You know that your answer to your favorite color is always going to be something else that's obscure. Right. Nobody's getting a guess. You'll remember that part.
I had that the other day. I logged onto a website. I logged into my bank. And for some reason, it had forgotten me. Or I hadn't logged in a while. So it asked me one of my security questions.
It knows you're retired.
It knows I'm retired.
You ain't got no money.
Who are you kidding? You owe us. Prove it's you so we can come to your house and take it. So I went and looked and realized, yes, indeed, I had done it here. The answer had absolutely zero relation to the question, which makes it a secure answer.
Yep.
So although I don't do any of those Facebook quizzes, if I did, they still wouldn't get the right information from me. So... be very careful what you do. You should have long passwords. You should have complex passwords. And that doesn't mean... And oh, by the way, JT47! Hashtag 43649JJWY is actually no more secure and probably less secure than we have no fate but what we make! Capital Y or whatever that
length
is.
Length is better than complexity.
Right,
in
because
general.
Computers don't speak English.
They don't know when the password ends. They only know if it worked when they're trying to log
compared
in.
Compared to the list.
To them, J347Y243 is semantically identical to "there is no fate but what we make." It doesn't understand the meaning of either one. Mm-hmm. They're all just symbols.
Zeros and ones.
Right. More symbols, more diverse symbols. That's better than a short phrase you would remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just for notification, trust no one with the number one is number 25 on the list of most common passwords.
See that? And in that list of most common passwords, computers can try that entire list in an 800th of a second.
Yep.
So trust me, 25 is no better than one or 1,000 for that matter.
Yep.
So you really don't want to use any of those. And and we're starting to see now people are calling them passphrases.
Yeah.
Not passwords.
Yes.
Same idea. The only difference is they're reminding you it should be longer and more complex.
Yeah.
Somebody did, I'll see if I can find the blog. They did a password analysis based on keyboard position.
Yeah.
You know, so something, you know, QCXCFT. Well, that's pretty random. No, that's your keyboard going down and then back up.
Yep.
And the same thing on cell phone keypads. What appears to be random is not, because it's just down one row, up the next row.
Yep.
Let's see if I can find that blog entry again. It was really interesting. So what appeared to a human to be random, a cryptographer saw the pattern and wrote a program to say, yep, here's the pattern, and these are not random.
Right. So QWERTY-UEOP, that's just the top of the keyboard.
Yeah.
ASDFGF, SEMI-LKJHJ, that's the initial exercise for typing classes. Yeah.
QAZXSW.
Right.
That's the first row down, the second row up.
Right.
It looks random. It's
but
not.
It's not.
Yeah.
So you really need to pick a phrase that makes sense to you. It doesn't even... No, I apologize. You just need to pick a phrase. It doesn't have to make sense to you. It shouldn't be a quote that's... That, you know, if you're always saying it's all good, never use that as a password. If you're, you know, don't use your favorite quarterback or team name or any of that stuff. Listen, we're going to take a slight... You've wasted an entire hour with us, and that's good because it's a lazy Saturday afternoon. So you're going to get the chance to do it again. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you. It's Soundbites. Please give us a call. We'll be around for another hour, but please call early, call often. It's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 5 minutes after the hour, against our collective better judgment, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe.
We're still here.
It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before we go any farther, let me take just a moment, and because we do this during pledge drives, but we never do it otherwise. You hear the phrase member-supported Jazz 90.1. But think about what that means for a moment. I just personally want to thank every person who is a member of this station because they're the reason we're here. That's all. Just member supported means a lot more than just a phrase. Here's if you Apple people aren't feeling beat up enough after our first news item, here's another one. Apple will soon push out a fix for a new security bug that's affected users of its Mac operating system. Yes, this is a different bug from the ThunderStrike 2 bug. Reported in early June, the bug known as DYLD is considered a serious hole that could allow hackers to remotely run a program on a Mac using administrator rights which potentially opens up wide access to the entire operating system. The vulnerability has already been exploited in the wild, according to The Guardian, leading to at least one adware installer taking advantage of it to further its capabilities. In response, Apple will fix the bug with the next update to its Mac OS X, specifically, and here's a volume number that simply doesn't have enough 10s in it. Mac OS X 10.10.5. The initial beta of the next security update did not contain the patch, leading to some concern that it might not be resolved until El Capitan is released in the fall. Apple has long enjoyed a reputation as a more secure operating system than Windows, and yes, Windows does get bitten by a fair number of bugs, forcing Microsoft to roll out patches and fixes on a regular basis. But Apple's Mac OS is hardly immune from security flaws. Bugs have popped up in the past, including the so-called go-to-fail OS X security hole in April of 2014, the shell shock or bash bug from last September, three severe vulnerabilities uncovered by Google's Project Zero security team in January, not to mention the ThunderStrike 2 worm, which was our first story today. In the past, Apple has sometimes been slow about patching bugs, raising concern among security experts and OS X users. But the latest beta for the next update to OS X 10.10.5 does include the fix for the DYLD exploit, according to security researcher Stefan Esser, who first reported the bug. On July 31st, Esser said, looks like dropping DYLD exploit resulted in Apple having it fixed in OS X 10.5.5 beta 2. Suddenly, they can work faster. On Tuesday, Apple also updated its X Project system, a security feature that filters out malware to catch any malware that taps into the DYLD vulnerability. That naturally raises the topic of whether or not you should run anti-malware software on your Mac. Many Mac users have contended that security software is not necessary, as the Mac is a secure operating system, especially with such features as X Project. But given that bugs do crop up from time to time, and Apple isn't always quick on the draw to squash them, installing a good security program on your Mac is a good idea at any point. So what antivirus software do you run on your Mac? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
My favorite anti-malware program for the Mac just got purchased by Malwarebytes. And on one hand, you know, good, he got purchased, makes some money, and now he's got money behind him to continue developing it. But on the other hand, that one guy writing code, just sort of feels right.
Yeah, what's the name of that one?
Well, now it's Malwarebytes anti-malware for Mac.
Okay, still free?
Yes.
Good, because Clam X is not free anymore.
Oh, really?
It's free. I think that's true. It's still free on Linux, but I don't know that it's still free on the Mac. And I suppose Mac people are used to paying for stuff that everybody else gets for free. But okay, I guess. But
Says buy now.
Yeah, buy now. There you go.
So there are still several free good antivirus programs: Sophos, Avast. Antivir, I think they have one too.
Yeah,
but like we've said right along, granted, the Security Tango, it's all freebies. But if you start using them, really enjoy them, and because they're keeping your machine safe, look into purchasing it. Because you know what? That's what keeps the companies going. People just constantly freeloading and never paying for it, doesn't give them much incentive to, if something's wrong with it, or to do updates or keep updating their databases as often.
Right. Yeah. Look, for those of you who don't know, look up the tragedy of the commons. We all like free stuff, but look up the tragedy of the commons. Every once in a while, it's time to be an adult. And I believe that's true of software. We all talk about, I can't afford anything, as you take your fifth puff on another cigarette at, what is it, $10 a pack these days? Yeah, right.
We all pick and choose what we want to afford.
That's exactly right.
But in the software community, the free and open source, or just free, is a really great altruistic way of distributing software.
Right.
Somebody's got to pay the programmer to put food on the table for the kids. So
yeah.
They either have a day job where their employer says, okay, you know, you can write this and we don't own it.
Right.
Or they accept shareware fees, but shareware doesn't work for most authors.
It really doesn't.
Somebody has to pay for it somewhere along the way. And if you can form a foundation and accept, you know, grant money, you know, great. But most, you know, individual programmers can't do that.
And the first guy who ever put out shareware, Jim Button, Buttonware, I have a letter from him that said, thank you for paying for this software. Nobody's ever done that before. I may well be the first person who ever paid for shareware.
Wow.
I don't know that. I mean, no one will ever know that. But I'm certainly the first guy who paid Jim Button, and Jim Button was the first guy to put out shareware.
Yeah.
So you've got groups like Ubuntu, which puts out free software. Well, it's backed by Mark Shuttleworth, who's a multimillionaire. And they also have, they and Red Hat and several other places who put out free Linux software also have paid versions. Red Hat Enterprise Linux is a four-pay version that comes with support. And for both them and Ubuntu, you can also buy support. And that's how they keep their companies delivering free software. The software is free. If you want support for your corporation or company or whatever, then that costs you money, and that's how they keep the doors open. But for any software that says, if you really like us, you know, send us a beer money or send us a couple of bucks or whatever, be an adult. Every once in a while, that's probably not a bad idea. But that's, I guess it's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Are you living in fear on the internet? The latest batch of internet malware, malvertising.
Yeah.
You go to a website, you know, Facebook, Walmart, you know, Kmart, doesn't matter, and an ad is displayed that claims you have a virus or claims there's a problem with your computer, and it, you know, usually fills up your whole screen. You do not have to click on anything for that ad to activate.
Right.
It's an auto-run JavaScript. Just right. Go to the page, you get infected. And that's very discouraging. So yes. You can turn off JavaScript,
right.
And then the
most
rest of
the internet breaks.
Most of the internet breaks. The rest of the web pages don't work either. So it's very, very hard to know what to do, especially for, you know, the vast majority of these novice, you know, regular people, novice users that, you know, I just want to go to Facebook and see about, you know, Cousin Phil.
Right.
But
right.
Some enterprising bad guy, and I want to find this guy and punch him in the face, figured out that the
probably good, have to stand in line.
The good guys buy ads on Facebook. I'm going to buy an ad on Facebook.
Yep.
And it may only be there for an hour, but how many millions, hundreds of millions of people got infected by it in that hour?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
It's like whoever was the first person to invent pay toilets.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I want to shake his hand for being such an incredible entrepreneur or punch him in the nose.
Yeah.
Right. But, yeah, so it's a...
You don't crawl under?
Look at me. Do I crawl under? Yeah, that's what you're talking about, that drive-by download stuff, the drive-by malware, where you don't have to do anything to get infected. One of the big reasons I'm moving more and more and more to a Chromebook... It is as if based on several years of Black Hat, you know, they have the Pwn to Own contest every year. They put up a Windows machine, a Mac, a Linux box, and a Chromebook, and they're the highest end possible versions of each. So it's tens of thousands of dollars.
With all the patches loaded and everything up to date.
Everything up to date to that morning.
Yep.
And the first person to break a particular machine gets to own it, plus wins bounties, plus wins more. So there's you're looking at possibly $100,000 for each machine that gets broken. So a lot of the best hackers go into this contest every year. The first machine to fall every single year is a Mac. Every single year is a Mac.
And it's Charlie, what was his name? Charlie Owen?
Charlie
Owen. It's the same guy that does it every
year.
Yeah.
Right behind it is Windows. Eventually, within a day or two, a Linux machine will fall. But so far, a Chromebook has not fallen. It has not. There's no hooks into the operating system. There's no way to grab anything. So I'm doing more and more stuff on my Chromebook because it's just more secure.
Charlie,
all right.
Charlie Miller.
Charlie Miller.
In fact, Apple got so mad at him, they revoked his developer status.
Yep. Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's up?
Yeah, my question is, I live on the Google Chrome, the tiny sidebar where they list your favorites were imported from Internet Explorer.
Okay.
Question for you. If I want to get rid of that list and import a new list, how would I do that?
So you want to wipe out all your Chrome
favorites on the Google Chrome because the Internet Explorer, they're different. There's a lot of new ones. So I want to wipe out the whole thing and import new. How do you do that?
There is a man, on the far right side, those three lines.
Yeah.
That's called the, that's actually called the hamburger menu.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Okay.
But under bookmark, if you open that up, there's bookmark manager. And
yeah,
then you can.
Bookmarks. I don't see manager, but it says bookmark manager. Yes. Yeah.
If you open that, you'll see all your bookmarks. You can just select all of them and delete them. You know, click on one, select all. Hit backspace. I'm not going to do that.
Okay, it says organize.
Yeah, so that'll let you organize your bookmarks. You can change their order.
So how would I delete those?
Click on it and delete it.
Oh.
Or you can click on one.
Oh, delete the, I see, imported from IE. Just delete the whole thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so now for the new ones, I just start from scratch.
Yeah, absolutely. You can then start from scratch.
Yeah, so how do you import them new? I forgot.
From the bookmarks menu, there is an import bookmarks menu.
Okay.
Also in that hamburger menu.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Oops, sorry.
All right. So that should do it for you.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck. Yeah, we.
Now, is there a program that synchronizes bookmarks between browsers?
Yeah, I was just going to ask exactly the same thing.
A lot of browsers have programs that will synchronize the same browser across other platforms. So if you have two computers, Chrome will synchronize the bookmarks between them. You know, Firefox has that. Apple Safari has that. But I don't know if there used to be one called Xmarks. Is that still around?
Yeah, I was just about to say Xmarks still exists.
And that one will synchronize different browsers across the different platforms.
Right.
Which is kind of neat if you like using more than one browser.
Right. And you can download it from the Chrome Web Store as well as others. So that'll work. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from
Tawaga, New York.
You got it. What's up, Joe?
Well, the reason it's called the hamburger menu is if you look at it like on the side, it's like bottom of the bun, hamburger patty, and top of the bun.
I know, but to me, it actually looks more like a hot dog menu.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, besides, it doesn't look like much like a. I think of hamburger buns as being domed on the top, so.
Exactly. So it doesn't really work for me either way, but I know it's the hamburger menu. I call it the hamburger menu, and I get blank looks like I've been speaking Urdu.
It's hacker speak, kind of. Anyhow, I am kind of fond of one of Firefox extension called NoScript.
Yeah.
Yes, it makes life very, very annoying sometimes browsing the web. But
especially when you're first setting it up and nothing works right.
Oh, yeah. Well, the whole idea is that on a site-by-site basis, you tell NoScript, okay, you're allowed to run this JavaScript. You're allowed to run this JavaScript. No, you're not allowed to run that JavaScript.
And do you want to run it?
Yeah, do you want to run it this one time, or do you want to always run it when you go back to this page?
Yes, it has a temporarily allow from this site, and then it has permanently allow from this site,
right.
And revoke temporary permissions.
Right.
It also has make temporary permissions permanent and globally allow. In other words, it kind of turns itself off. It just allows everything.
Right.
It also has allow everything on this page, which you might have to do multiple times because JavaScript can include other JavaScript.
Right.
But I like that a whole bunch.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for your time.
Have fun. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 22 minutes after the hour. Shockingly, it's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 27 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. We were talking before the break about synchronizing bookmarks, and Steve has put up a link to Xmarks, which is a program that will synchronize your bookmarks across your browsers, not just all your Chrome browsers, but across Chrome and Explorer and Safari and, for all I know, Opera and Dolphin. And there's probably 200 browsers.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't work real well with links, but the rest of them, not a problem. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter.
Dolphin is part of the premium package.
Oh, so it does do Dolphin. They have to pay for that one.
Yeah,
okay. Our next caller is Walter from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Walter. What's up?
I need some advice about a computer system.
Yeah.
Actually, desktop computer, if you're still dealing in that.
Yeah.
Nowadays. Well, we are dealing with processing databases like 26 at a time that are growing in size, and our computer gets slower and slower. So I'm trying to look at a new system, and I'm kind of wondering what I should look for, more RAM or faster processor or both?
Faster hard drive.
As much as you can afford.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It depends on how big your data sets are. Okay, the fastest way to manage a data set is to load the entire data set into memory. And deal with it there. So if let's say you get 16 gig and your data set is 14 gig, then you know you can load the whole thing into memory and process it and write it back out again. If your data sets are terabytes in size, then you have three things that need to all work together, and that's the speed of the processor, the size, the amount and speed of your memory, and the speed and size of your hard drive.
And a lot of people with database issues like this will move to solid-state drives.
Right.
Because they're faster, but they're more expensive. They're like double the price of a spinning drive.
Right. Particularly when you get up into the 2 and 3 terabyte range.
Yeah.
You're well over that. So there's no one easy answer, but if you can only pick one, pick RAM.
Yeah. We are at 12 gig RAM right now, and it's really slowing down tremendously. And we're really not at that, you know, the databases are not that big. They're between 3 and 50 gig maybe.
Right.
But at some point, sometimes we have like 50 different databases that are being searched at a time, or one, not even at a time, but like 3 or 4 at a time, but within one search. It's kind of hard to explain.
No, but I get it. So here's the thing. When you're talking about databases, there's two things that are, nobody expects Spanish Inquisition. There are several important things. One is the speed of the hard drive. The other is the speed of the language or database software you're using. And the third is how accurate your indices are.
What was the third again?
The indices, the indexes.
Okay, yeah.
if you're doing a lot of searching on non-indexed fields,
mm-hmm.
that takes significantly longer than searching on indexed fields.
Yeah, I would assume that they're indexed.
Never assume.
Yeah.
Okay.
Honestly, never assume. Take a look at the data structures and see if there are indeed indices for those fields.
And maybe even tell them to re-index.
Oh, and even re-index them. Assuming, yeah, I don't know how much control you have over the data itself, but if you can re-index the data so that it is both fresh and you know that it's indexed. And index all the fields that you search.
Okay.
Searches get exponentially slower when you have to search a non-indexed field. And if you're searching two or three or four or five non-indexed fields, you might as well count. Time your response time with a calendar.
Yeah. But on the other hand,
she had a war.
Yeah. Don't index every field. Because that can slow things down too, right?
Well, it can. You certainly don't need to. You don't want to index huge text fields, things like that. That's a problematic thing because you end up with indices. The other thing is the more fields you index, the larger your database becomes because the indices are part of the database. But you take a look. Do a little data analysis. God, I used to teach this stuff. I haven't thought about this stuff in ages. Take a look at the data that you are searching and look at your most common fields. I mean, if you search once every 4 years on age or sex, you don't necessarily have to bother indexing those, although that's probably a cheap index. But, you know, if you're always searching last name, date, time, membership number, say. Make sure all four of those fields are indexed because that will speed up your search immensely.
Okay. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does, yeah. Okay, so the indexing and then the having enough RAM to load it all into the memory would be definitely a plus.
Right. Now, if you've got a 50 gig database, probably you're not going to have enough RAM.
Yeah.
But enough RAM to load the indices at the very least.
Okay.
Is important because if you can load the indices, or as most people call them incorrectly, the indexes. I have a classical education in New Latin, so the indices. If you load the indices into RAM, that helps significantly.
And then, if you do get a machine with a solid state drive, it can load the data off of disk really, really fast.
Right. Okay. So having a solid state drive is very good. Having lots of RAM is very good. Having a fast processor is very good. In that order.
Okay.
Although, no, I'd say RAM first, then a super fast hard drive, a solid state drive, and then the processor speed.
And again, it's what your go for as much as your pocketbook will allow.
Right, yeah, right.
That's always the problem in business.
That's usually the thing.
I want to spend as little as I can to get as much as I need.
Well, right. The problem is, price of poker keeps going up, so it may be time to step up to solid state drives.
All right. Yeah, I'll certainly seriously consider that.
Yeah, or at least a 10,000 RPM spinning drive.
15,000.
15,000 now. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
A lot of the cheap drives you buy are only 5,400.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So if you need a consultant, give me a call.
All right.
I'm his consultant.
I honestly haven't said. Yeah, he's my consultant. So you'll pay. You'll have to hire his book. I haven't taught this in a while. So I'm dragging this stuff out of the back of my head somewhere. But seriously, solid-state drives, lots of RAM, fast processors.
That's what we've said always.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, that has never changed.
Right.
Yeah, if you're a home user, surfing the web, you can get away with a $500 computer.
Right.
At but business, he's you're looking, doing, yeah.
It, particularly when you're looking at 50 gig or 5 terabyte data sets. That's huge, and particularly if you're doing joins and multiple joins, and things like that in the data. And it also depends on, you know, what is your database software? What's the engine? How fast is that? If you're doing it in Access, again, you might as well just go home and retire. But if you're doing it in, you know, MySQL or MariaDB or something along that lines, it can be very fast. But, you know, fast is relative.
Right. You know, but what I've tried to point out, though, is for this story, we've not changed our course as far as when we said for a business application or for a gamer. Those standards have always held since way back from the 486.
Right.
As much as you can afford. Because you know what? It's the more you put into it, the better your results are going to be, whether it's a work-related, like you said, working with spreadsheets, or whether it's a database or a gamer.
Right. A gamer will spend $5,000 on the video card alone.
Yeah,
right. But to get back to Walter's issue, Walter, I would suggest solid-state drives and as much RAM as you can cram in those machines. And then if you're buying new machines, then also look at faster processors. Also, and I just thought of this, if you've got multiple processors like quad-core processors or quad-dual-core processors or whatever that is, make sure that the software you use also has the capability of multitasking. Because if you can have 80 cores, and if your software won't use it, it doesn't matter.
You're all dressed up, no place to go.
Yeah. So pay attention to kind of all those things. It's like tuning an automobile. You can do everything you want, and then you put a crappy filter on it. You got a lousy car anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good luck, Walter. I hope that works out for you.
Like we've said, always, you know, the price of poker keeps going up.
There's both a science and an art to databases. And sometimes it's hard to figure that out.
Unfortunately, studies have shown that solid-state drives don't last any that longer than spinning drives.
It's 5 years no matter what you buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They run faster. They have faster access time. If anything, they should wear out faster. But
because they don't have the moving parts.
Yeah. When you write data to a solid-state drive, a flash memory cell, it literally damages the cell. It forces the electricity into that cell.
Mm-hmm.
You can only do that so many times. And so when you buy a solid-state drive, there's a whole bunch of cells that are reserved. And if a cell gets weak, it will move data to another cell. But that means, you know, the device will wear out about as fast as spinning drives do.
And that's part of the art. One of the things that people do is they will have the databases they read most often on solid-state devices, the databases they write to on hard drives. Again, 15K hard drives.
Right.
But hard drives, because they're not, assuming that they're two different types of databases, right? Or they're linked together, joined in some way, that sort of thing. Yep. So it's a large part of it has to do with the art of database
management. There's a video on the net of a guy in a data center, and they've got software running saying how fast their data is transporting. He shouts at the rack of hard drives, and the transfer rate goes down.
Yeah. Wow.
You don't even have to touch it. Just shout at it.
Wow. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Microsoft, speaking of the Black Hat Conference, it's all about security this week. Microsoft is using the occasion of the Black Hat Hacker Conference as a springboard to unveil a new approach to bug bounties. In the launch of Microsoft's latest operating system, the race is on to discover overlooked bugs and security flaws that could place users at risk. Microsoft's Windows operating system, alongside Flash and Java, is a constant target for cyber attackers due to the popularity and widespread use of the system. Now that Windows 10 is available, it's important to entice as many researchers as possible to submit vulnerabilities before they become a widespread security challenge or are released into the underground markets for sale. Jason Shirk, a security architect at Microsoft, announced changes to the Redmond Giant's bug bounty program on Wednesday alongside demos of the Black Hat Conference in Vegas. Shirk said Microsoft's bug bounty program has been revised with a number of changes. Rewards for the bounty for defense, a reward for defensive ideas that accompany a qualifying mitigation bypass submission, has been raised from $50,000 to $100,000 American dollars. Microsoft says this alteration brings defense up to par, Microsoft says this alteration brings defense up on par with offense. I apparently cannot type. Of which the tech giant already offers a lure of $100,000 for, and I quote, truly novel exploits against the Windows operating system. Learning about new exploitation techniques earlier helps Microsoft improve security by leaps instead of capturing one vulnerability at a time as a traditional bug bounty alone would, Microsoft said. The tech giant believes the novel defender should be rewarded equally for their research. They're also placing more emphasis on combating and authenticating security flaws. If a researcher finds an authentication vulnerability and submits it through the online services bug bounty program within the bonus period of August 5th to October 5th, their rewards will be doubled. Finally, the Redmond Giant is adding remote app to the list of domains covered on the online services bug bounty, which is used to run Windows apps hosted on Azure on a variety of devices. On August 5th, Microsoft rolled out the first package of non-security-related updates and fixes for Windows 10, officially known as KB3081424, although dubbed Service Release 1. The updates are delivered via Windows Update and includes functionality and reliability fixes. So, does it sound like Microsoft is getting serious about bugs? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, like they do about everything else.
Like they do about everything. Listen,
they get on a bandwagon for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, yeah, let's do this, this.
Well, because
and
Microsoft
sucker everybody
is,
in.
Right, but because Microsoft is changing the way they do business, and they're eventually going to offer Windows on a subscription-only basis, mm-hmm. they have to make sure it's more secure.
Oh.
And so they're finally taking security a little seriously. And people, before you start filling out bug bounties, please be aware that I have already submitted the bug that the easiest way to keep Windows secure is to never turn the machine on, encase it in cement, and drop it into the canal. So you probably are going to have to find
it. You advocate Chromebooks?
Turn off your Windows machine, buy a Chromebook. There's your security right there. But Microsoft really is taking it seriously this time, and they're putting their money where their mouth is, which is in
yeah, but the thing that is, oh, they can put their money where their mouth is, but then it's all in the timing.
Yep.
I mean, if they find out an issue and they don't get around to it for, 2 to 3 weeks, that's not going to cut it.
Well, and that's what people are saying about Apple right now. Apple has known about the big bugs that are out there for months and have not yet released patches. And that's annoying people all to heck. It's not that Apple is not making the fixes. They're not applying the fixes. And the same thing has always been true of Microsoft. They will make the fix, but they don't offer it to the public. They don't put it right into a download pack. And I get it. You do have to do all the testing and yada, yada, yada. But really, when something is that egregiously bad, somebody seriously needs to put more resources on it and make it happen faster.
One of the things I'm not too happy with are the security contests they have at like Black Hat. Researchers will find a bug and hold it for 6 months
yep. mm-hmm.
until the next contest, hoping to win money. And then it may take another 6 months for the publisher to fix the problem.
Yep. I agree with you. I think there's got to be a better way to do this.
So individual companies offering their own bounties of big money, rather than waiting for Black Hat or CanSec or DefCon, one of the other security conventions. But then we don't want to, those guys, we want them to show us their bugs too.
Right.
So it's a catch 22.
You're right. If you have the opportunity to make $100,000 from Microsoft now, or wait 6 months and get a $20,000 computer, which one are you going to take?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So by raising the bounties,
you don't have to be a brain surgeon.
And Google
on
just
that
raised
one.
Some of their bounties too. One of their big bounties was what, 1337, because that spells leet.
Right.
Well, that's $1,300. Yeah, I don't care. I'll wait for the $20,000 computer at Black Hat.
Right. Well, and not every. Bounty is $100,000.
Yeah.
The really egregious ones are, and that's kind of what they're looking at this point. The reality is, and we've said this over and over again. I don't care what operating system you're using, except at least so far Chromebooks. You are vulnerable when you go online.
Mm-hmm.
If your computer never goes online. You know, and there's always somebody who'll call up and say, I've got an XP machine that's never had a bug because it never goes online. Okay, I don't want to talk to you. I don't care. We're not interested in that. As long as you also never put a disk or a thumb drive in it from another machine.
Yeah, hello.
Or anything else. Right. But if it's completely and truly isolated, I don't know why you bother to turn it on in the first place, but good for you.
Mm-hmm. To play solitaire.
Maybe, yes. Which now, by the way, Microsoft wants to charge you for $10 a year to play solitaire.
Find a different.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Find somebody else's solitaire. Hundreds of other solitaires.
Hundreds of other solitaires out there.
Minesweeper too.
What?
Minesweeper too.
Minesweeper is also $10 a year. I think they're in the same pack though.
Yeah.
So it's $10 for the two of them. So there's a bargain.
Yeah.
There's a bargain right there.
Don't forget, Microsoft. Kiss me where the sun don't shine.
Exactly. Microsoft is in the process of transitioning to a subscription only model. You will not buy Windows in a store. You will download it over the internet, you will pay Microsoft a yearly fee to own it, and as long as you continue to pay that fee, it will continue to work and continue to be updated. That's the model they're going for.
And even now, the retail boxes, because we sell them at our store, the retail boxes have a card in it with your license key, and then says, go to Microsoft.com/download and download it.
But here again, they're relying on the subscription stuff. But they can also get very smug because they are subscription. And once they got you locked in,
that's exactly right.
You're hosed. And if they want to take a week to 2 weeks, what are you going to do?
Right. And it will also be interesting to see how Apple reacts to that. Because if Microsoft suddenly starts making plenty of bucks and their stock is going up, which is really the end game in this thing.
It's all about the money.
If their stock keeps going up, then Apple is almost guaranteed to go to the same model, and eventually that'll kind of leave Linux as the only, already the only free operating system.
But Apple's model has been free for a couple of years now.
Right, but I'm saying years, they will, or $10 or $30.
Well, with them, it's always been you pay for the software when you buy the hardware.
Right.
So the software has been free since 10.8.
Rolled in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to actually free. Yep. But, yeah, so there's a sea change coming with all of these operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a very different future.
Chromebooks are looking more and more promising.
I love my Chromebook. I realized yesterday that I've said this many times, except for one or maybe two things, I don't ever need a desktop or a laptop, regular one anymore. I don't need it, and why am I paying for it?
Mm-hmm.
And when I go somewhere, I take the Chromebook, and I don't even worry about getting on a public Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because... Yeah. I know that so far, at least, there is no, and I always say so far, so far there is no exploit on Chromebooks. And one of the reasons that's true, folks, is because there are two versions of the operating system in the Chromebook. One of them is read-only. And every time the Chromebook turns on, it checks the two of them against each other. If they're different... then it doesn't boot. it goes to Google and downloads a new image and then checks that independently against several other sources before it will actually install that. And then it installs it and then makes that one read-only. Yep.
And quickly before we leave, the Apple Cider meeting is this Wednesday, August 12th at 7 p.m. It's at the Risen Christ Lutheran Church, 1000 Mosley Road in Fairport, just south of Route 31. And our keynote speaker will be our very own
Rob Linton,
talking about disc jockey software on some of his the other hat he wears.
So if you ever wanted to actually see Rob Linton in person, I don't know anybody who's actually had that.
And you can find more information at applecider.org.
Applecider.org. And we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is going to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Chris is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so we don't know what's going to happen. See you next week at Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening. See you in 166 hours.